So we are in our series, continuing on with the eight pillars of enduring joy. The Dalai Lama and Archbishop Desmond Tutu identified these pillars, and the first four are pillars of the mind, they say. So we've already traveled through the mind, through perception, humility, humor, and last week, acceptance. And then this week, we move into the heart, the final four pillars, and this one is forgiveness. It's interesting, too, I've noted how one pillar really flows into the next. Acceptance kind of gives way to forgiveness, and each one seems like it kind of hands off to the next. So as I was thinking about acceptance and forgiveness, I noticed that my friend Albert, who I haven't talked to in so long from Chicago, keeps coming to mind. So I thought, well, why does he keep coming into mind besides the fact that maybe it's time to reach out? You know how it is, we have dear friends in our hearts for a long, long period of time. Sometimes we haven't seen them in many years. So I was thinking about Albert and the last time I saw him and how he surprised me with this really moving prosperity blessing as we were parting. And then I thought about his life. And just like all of us, our lives have challenges, right? And I thought about how much Albert went through as a gay African-American man, not being accepted in many ways, in many circles, not really accept his sexuality wasn't very well accepted by his family, by his spiritual community. And yet he was the kind of guy that never turned on anyone. He never gave up on anyone. He always just, I watched him move through that pain and just accepted that people were where they were, and he was very forgiving. It was really a beautiful example, I think, for us all. His favorite, one of his favorite sayings is, keep your eyes on the prize. And so I imagine that, in part, keeps him in that mindset of love and forgiveness and unity and all these qualities that we all behold. So wherever you are, Albert, I love you and appreciate you and give thanks for this example that you hold for all of us. We can all probably think of somebody in our life that holds that kind of example, that sort of just a high level of showing up in the world where when things go awry and there's conflict or misunderstanding, that person seems to take the high road. And that can be maybe that person is you. I hope so. But maybe it's somebody in your life that you admire and look up to. So maybe think about that as we move through this pillar of forgiveness, somebody that you could reflect upon that might emulate and embody this characteristic for you. Forgiveness is this invaluable practice. It's a rare blend, really, of freedom and connection that comes through forgiveness. And forgiveness also, it unblocks that flow of love, so the love can keep flowing for us. We get it on an intellectual level, but this pillar brings us into the heart. So it's really where that big emotional work happens and inner spiritual work often happens. So forgiveness is often easier said than done because sometimes the wrongs feel insurmountable. Or the grudges have been held for so long, it just feels hard to open that Pandora's box, if you will, back up. But we probably also have noticed that holding grudges doesn't really bode well for any particular relationship. And it also, you may have noticed, spills over into our other relationships. So if we might hold a grudge in this one relationship and we think, well, everything's great in this relationship, there's still this part of us that has hardened in our hearts, or a part of us that is shut down, which means all that love can't flow in the relationships that we're in the world that we move about. So there is some level of shutdown that occurs wherever we're holding ill feelings. And so forgiveness brings us back, this practice brings us back to look, to consider, and to move through. So, you know, it's also interesting how things come around in patterns. Maybe you've noticed before that a certain boss or coworker or even a romantic partner brings, or maybe most likely the latter, brings forth something, a characteristic or a repeated behavior, something that just feels like it really presses your buttons. And, you know, that relationship maybe comes to an end or that job comes to an end and you think, oh, thank goodness I put that behind me. And then along comes the next boss or coworker or partner, or it shows up in another kind of role relationship, and suddenly you're dealing with that same thing again. after a while, we kind of go, what's the common denominator here? And we realize it's us, not them. That's really what sparks the inner work, because we want to end those patterns. We want to have healthy and fulfilling and connecting relationships. And we don't want it to be sorrowful and have ill feelings every day when we go to work or we come home. And so it behooves us then to do that work, and sometimes it takes that point of pain to get us to do it. But once we do, once we look within and we begin to apply forgiveness, we can heal, sometimes discover and heal old wounds. And it's a funny thing how once we do that inner work, it seems like those old patterns begin to vanish, and we don't have that need anymore to attract that kind of energy or behavior or speech pattern into our purview, into our world. And we are freer then to attract into our lives healthy and fulfilling relationships where we don't have that kind of blockage so much. Or when it comes up, it's easy to move through. So thank God for forgiveness, because it restores our hearts and our wholeness again. It also heals us and opens us up to transform the relationships we have into healthier, happier ones, and to attract new ones of that same ilk. So there's a study by the psychologist Charlotte Van Owen Witveliet. That's quite a mouthful. She asked people to remember a grudge while she studied their stress response in their bodies. And as participant after participant experienced holding remembering a grudge, what she found was blood pressure went up and heart rates went up, and people began to sweat. They also reported feeling sadness and anger, feeling out of control or less control and intensity. And not surprisingly, when they were asked to then empathize with the person who had hurt them and to extend forgiveness to that person, all those stress responses returned to normal. So if you need the scientific study to show you that forgiveness works, that it helps our entire beings, including even our bodies, there's some work for you. There's also research that indicates that our immune systems improve with forgiveness, and unforgiveness compromises our immune systems. So forgiveness frees our bodies, it frees our minds, and most of all, it frees our hearts. Let's take a moment to listen to this new original song by Heart Dream called Forgiveness.
The cradle of forgiveness, like a mighty river running clear. Forgiveness frees our heart, skipping over stones of rage and fear, melting into pure love like a mighty river running clear, like a mighty
So forgiveness frees our hearts, and it also, it isn't just about individual relationships. Forgiveness can move entire societies. It seems like an unbelievable thing when we just mentally think about it, but we have lots of examples in our world, and one really profound example, I think, is what occurred in South Africa. Nelson Mandela, as you probably know, spent 27 years in prison for being a resistor of the apartheid government in South Africa. And when he was released, it just is nothing short of a miracle that when he was released, he became the first democratically elected president of South Africa, not immediately, but not that long after. And he also voted for the first time he was able to vote in his own presidential election. That is mind-blowing to me, that he was given the voting right in the same election in which, as a black man, he was elected to be the first Democratic president of South Africa. Not to mention, he also won a Nobel Peace Prize. And when you think about where he came from and what he went through before that with his oppressors and his captors, you know what his secret to success was? Forgiveness. You guessed it. He forgave them of everything that happened, including not even being able to go to the funeral of his mother and his eldest son that occurred while he was in prison. He just kept forgiving. And then he brought the idea of forgiveness. Imagine this, a presidential administration where the idea is all about reconciliation through the power of forgiveness. And so it became, when he established the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa, that was predicated upon the idea that to err is human and to forgive is divine. And these Truth and Reconciliation Commission sessions were times when murderers came into the room with the families and the victims of atrocities and shared their stories. These heart-wrenching atrocities were shared once again. And time again, often it was the mothers of children who had been killed that not only forgave the perpetrators of the violence against their own family, but they embraced them and they called those murderers my child. It wasn't just one person that did that, it was many. That is just unfathomable in some ways, isn't it? When you think about that level of forgiveness, that kind of commitment to walk the spiritual path, to take the high road. So, in our country, we have the opportunity to heal. And it may really hinge on this idea of forgiveness. Our ability to forgive one another, whatever wrongs have been done in the past, there's too many wounds to name, there's no need to go into all that. We know how we perceive those things. But what we do know, I think what we can all agree on, is there is some healing that needs to be done. There is some unifying that could happen, some reconciling, and forgiveness could be a real key to that. If only we will open our hearts and be willing to look at that, to forgive ourselves, to forgive each other, for wounds inflicted of the past and salt added since. And if our ability to do that, I think we really can move into a time of deep healing and reconciliation and unity in our country. We can lead the path ourselves as people on a spiritual path to equality and unity for all. So just as last week's idea and pillar of acceptance is often misconstrued as weak. People sometimes think of forgiveness as weak, like we're letting somebody off the hook. We're excusing bad behavior in some way. But that's not what forgiveness is. Forgiveness is strong. It's a powerful force for good. It's hard to do, and it takes courage sometimes to walk through it, depending upon the scenario. And when we do, it's that art of holding somebody and seeing their humanity and having some compassion for the humanity, at the same time being clear and firm about the behaviors that are not okay. And so it's that blend of accountability and open-hearted acceptance, right? So we allow both of these to take place, and we kind of know how to, and even if we don't know how, we plunge headfirst into it and figure it out as we go. And maybe it'll be messy, but at least it will be an attempt from our hearts to heal, to make whole again our relationships, our organizations, our society as a whole. Everyone wins when we forgive, and everyone loses when we withhold. Desmond Tutu, who was named the chair of this Truth and Reconciliation Commission, said, "Those who say forgiving is a sign of weakness haven't tried it." I know a young woman, I'm going to call her Betty here, and Betty had a really lovely relationship with her mother, and then several years ago they had this big fight. Betty's mother pretty quickly forgave Betty, but Betty has held on to bitterness and contempt for her mother ever since. She punishes her by withholding the ability for her to see Betty's own young daughter, so she's keeping her grandmother away from her own granddaughter. And, of course, this punishes the innocent child caught in the midst of this as much as it keeps the grandmother from being able to see her. But, you know, who's the one who is really punished, right, when this kind of things happen that eats away at our own hearts and minds and the bitterness that's there? I witnessed this with Betty, this young woman, that she can't seem to hear the call of forgiveness above the sound and the noise of the story of her hurt. But every soul finds its way in its own time. I trust that, and I hope you do too, and trust it for yourself. That freedom comes, though, when we genuinely forgive, and it can come immediately when we do so. The Tutus say this in the book of forgiving. There's a slide for this. Yeah, there it is. Until we can forgive the person who harmed us, that person will hold the keys to our happiness. That person will be our jailer. When we forgive, we become our own liberator. So if you have feelings towards somebody, ill feelings towards somebody, I hope you might consider today taking a step toward forgiving, taking a step toward stopping that holding yourself as a prisoner of war in your own heart, and begin to wage peace there, even if it's just within yourself. Maybe you're not going to communicate with someone else, but you're going to write a letter to them, or you're going to somehow, in your own prayer time, forgive in that way. And maybe in time, you'll also share it with that person if they're still living, and you know they can perhaps hear you, and I believe, hear you and take that in from the other side as well. We all have so much to give, but our lived spiritual teachings and our lived spiritual teachings are so needed right now. So sometimes it's the other way around. It's not so much that somebody has done something to us, but we are aware that somebody has some ill feelings toward us. Something doesn't feel quite right. We either sense it or we know it. And Jesus actually gives us some instruction for that. He says, when you want to give your gift, you can't give it freely. You can't give it unencumbered. These are my words, not his, but this is essentially what he's saying. You can't give it unless you clear up whatever it is that's holding you hostage in your mind and your heart. If it feels like there's conflict and there's disharmony somewhere inside of you, And it, this is also in the spirit of oneness, right? Because it's not necessarily about giving to a person that you have issues with, just giving of your gifts, giving of your service, giving of your financial gifts even, that whatever it is that you're bringing, it can't be fully given, freely given, given in the love that you want to give it in, that divine love, one with me, you know, that we say when we give our gifts, unless we clear up what is there, what is blocking the way to the fullness of our gift. This is exactly what he says in Matthew 5. So when you are offering your gift at the altar, if you remember that your brother or your sister has something against you, leave your gift before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother or your sister, and then come and offer your gift. The primatologist Franz de Waal says that chimps kiss and make up. And in studies they have found, in observations they have found, that across the animal kingdom, there are peacemaking activities that happen. They found it in goats and apes and sheep and hyenas and dolphins. The one animal that they keep studying and still hasn't shown up as a reconciling group, domestic cats. So those of you who have a cat at home, you might have noticed that that doesn't come easily necessarily and effortlessly to a cat. But here's a few others that do, that were actually caught anyway, kissing and making up on camera. A couple of llamas, a couple of giraffes, and even fish. Forgiveness makes us feel lighter. Did you know that we can actually lose weight when we kiss and make up with our honey? It's true. 24 calories per minute while kissing are burned, and depending upon how passionate the kiss is, that can go up to 74 calories per minute. Pretty amazing, huh? So don't forget to kiss your honey when you go home. And while we're on kissing trivia, I just want to share this. Did you know where the XO came from, this idea of XO on your text or your signing your letters? Well, nobody really does know, it doesn't seem. After an internet search, I found out lots of theories. But here's one theory that I liked and felt timely. In the Middle Ages, illiterate people would sign their name with an X. And so they would also sign, when they voted, their ballot with an X. And then it came into fashion to kiss their ballot, and so it made an O next to the X. And I actually did that before I read this. When I voted, I prayed over my ballot and I kissed it before I dropped it off. So you might have some fun with that in the next couple days if you haven't voted yet. So how do we forgive? It's important to take a look at how, because it's easy to talk about and say, yeah, go forgive, forgive, forgive. And then you go, well, okay, I'm ready to do it, but I don't even know where to begin. So let me give you a couple of possibilities of some structure of where you can begin. The best one I have found, the best steps I have found to use are Colin Tipping's radical forgiveness steps. Some of you know these well. So there are five basic steps. The first is that you tell the story of whatever happened and you just tell it without any, you know, censoring. You just, not like it has to be told in the spiritual way, is you just tell it, you vent it. You can tell it to a loving person who can hold it for you. You can write it down. Just tell it. And then feel the feelings that arise as you tell that story and maybe relive the experience a little bit. Let it really be felt. Don't try to spiritually bypass over this. This is a key part, is to feel the feelings. And then the next step is to collapse the story down to just the facts. So we take out all the interpretation and we come back down to just the facts of the story. It's pretty eye-opening when we do this, because we realize so much of it was the story we built around the story. And so when it's down to that collapsed version, we can then reframe the story. What really happened? And maybe see our part in it, in our response and our reactivity. And finally, we can now integrate the new story. And that new story is empowering, because it's the story of triumph. It's the story of moving through. It's the story of forgiveness. Another thing that you can do is just scan your life and just look and see, what do I have left to forgive? You know, maybe just take some time to contemplate that in meditation and see what comes up. If you want a little more structure to that, you could write, I forgive, and use the structure of the scripture. Remember when Peter asked Jesus, how many times should we forgive? And he says something like 70 times 7. And so out of that comes a journaling exercise where you can write, I forgive, and finish that sentence 70 times for 7 days. And you will see the patterns that arise, the things that are coming up for healing. And that then can be the work that you apply to forgiveness. No one is incapable of forgiving, and no one is unforgivable. Desmond Tutu said that. No one is incapable of forgiving, and no one is unforgivable. It's important to remember that when we've come to that point of, yes, everyone but, that's when we can really do our work, right? So let forgiveness untie the knots in your body, in your mind, in your heart. And let your heart be blessed again and again with good health and free-flowing divine love. Let's release any ill feelings and let's forgive together. Let's say this together. I now release any ill feelings and forgive. I bless my heart and all my relations as love flows freely once again. And so it is.